This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio today by the terrible twosome.
The terrible twosome.
It is
Arvin Yuvraj
and
Audrey Raj.
Yes, if you want to get in touch with the show at any point throughout today, 018-789-8899 is the WhatsApp number. And of course, if you want to get us on Twitter, we are at BFM Radio. I quite like the terrible twosome, right?
You
and I
like
the name.
Yeah.
It's like a tag team.
It is like a tag team. Arvin Yuvraj of House Raj, right?
And
you've clearly got to be House Raj as well, right?
Yeah.
You need to choose a sigil, like a emblem.
But we did already. It's the elephant.
The elephant.
Oh, yeah. Elephant. Yeah. Okay, all right. Enough about that. We kind of have a Game of Thrones linked story a little bit later on.
Yes. A little
kind of link. We don't want to give away too many spoilers. Somebody died. Anyway, of course, they always die. They always die.
Every episode somebody dies.
I didn't reveal who it was. I just said somebody
Rich.
Did. Right. So, stories today. We're going to be talking about GrabCar. They've had a huge investment. We'll then be talking about Alibaba and Tencent fighting it out over Southeast Asia. The Bursa Leap, which you just heard a little bit about on the 12 o'clock news there, of course. Arvin, you'll be talking about Disney and YouTube's kind of stuff. Is it YouTube involved as well?
Disney and how they're tracking people's emotions.
Oh.
Yeah.
They've been doing that for generations, though. They made me cry over Lion King.
Way more now.
Right?
You mean they've been manipulating people's emotion and now they're tracking it?
They're tracking it better?
And then, of course, we wrap up with the death of one of our favorite pieces of software.
Yes.
Right. Arvin, tell me what's going on. Audrey, tell me what's going on with GrabCar right now.
See, now he's confusing.
Yeah, I'm confused. Totally confused.
All right. Well, Grab just scored $2 billion in new financing from existing investors Didi Chuxing and SoftBank Group Corp. Of course, you might remember Didi as the company that defeated Uber in China.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Didi said the round could expand by a further $500 million more with input from other existing backers and new investors. Some people say Alibaba is in the mix here too. Reports say this new money gives Grab a post-money valuation of more than $6 billion, guys.
Holy smokes.
Yes. So, you know, what's happening here is both Didi and SoftBank are doubling down on the belief that Grab has what it takes to defeat Uber in Southeast Asia, the same way that Didi did it in China when Uber agreed to sell its local business. This happened last year.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, the same thing happened in Russia this month when Uber agreed to sell its business to local rival Yandex. So they're trying to pump as much money into Grab, try and make them a force that can fight Uber, and with hopes that Uber will finally also just exit the Southeast Asia market.
Well, so far, Grab are operating in, what, 36 cities across 7 countries in Southeast Asia?
Yes.
50 million downloads from users and 1.1 million drivers.
So here's the thing, right? If Grab really wants to make an impact in Southeast Asia, what they have to do is they have to attack Indonesia. This is because Indonesia is tipped to account for more than half of the revenue in ride-sharing services across the region by the year 2025. So this is in less than a decade. And the industry is forecast to be worth about, what, $13 billion by that time. And so if Grab really wants to take Southeast Asia, they've got to get into Indonesia. But they've got a big but there.
and she will not lie.
With Gojek. So Gojek is, well, widely known as the market leader in Indonesia right now. And they've already started offering payment services before Grab has even dipped its toes into the market. And so what they need to do is, basically try and pump money into Indonesia. So at the start of this year, Grab announced a $700 million investment to build its services in Indonesia, of which at least $100 million will be dedicated to investments and acquisitions and fintech in general.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see, like, you know, how much confidence people like SoftBank and Didi have in Grab. Like, so just in this, like, this room alone, which do you use more, Grab or Uber?
Grab.
So for me, it's become like a default. So I hardly use, I mean, I choose Grab because it's easier, the drivers show up quicker and all that. So, you know, a bunch of reasons. But yourself?
I use Uber, actually, because I've had several bad experiences with Grab. Mm-hmm. But it's good. I think most people here have both apps on their phones.
Sure.
And then they compare prices and they see, you know, which one they can get the driver faster and they just go with that, right?
My question is, I mean, it's okay these companies throwing an awful lot of money at Grab. But last year or the year before, the authorities here were coming down really heavily on car sharing and, you know, these kind of apps. Is that going to pose a problem, do we think?
I think most governments have already started trying to incorporate all these ride-sharing.
I think they have to, right?
Yeah, they have to. I mean, because this whole hire job industry thing is the way of the future, right?
So, okay, well, speaking about money and investments and all things Southeast Asia, two global tech forces are putting their mark and money into Southeast Asia's startup ecosystem. One of them you've just heard about. So rather than Google, Facebook, or Microsoft, it's the Chinese duo of Alibaba and Tencent. They're the driving forces behind the importing of large sums of capital and vast business experience into Southeast Asia's most promising startups. Both companies, who are sworn enemies in China, appear to have realized the potential in the region and are now acting upon it. That means battles, drama, and probably more. Welcome to Southeast Asia's tech Game of Thrones.
I love how they phrase this.
Right? So it's been an area of interest for businesses, for our neighbors, of course. You know, tech aside, Southeast Asia is home to more than 600 million consumers. Six primary markets, of course: Singapore, Indonesia, Thailand, Vietnam, Malaysia, and Philippines. And in today's digital era, smartphones have been a key catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
So a much-cited report co-authored by Google last year showed that Southeast Asia has 260 million internet users, with 3.8 million more going online per month. That's tipped to grow the internet population to 480 million people by 2020. It's not quite at China levels yet, but it's on its way there.
And what is China at right now?
731 million users.
Wow.
So that same report forecasts that the region's internet economy, so all businesses generated from the web, will be worth $200 billion by 2025. And that's up 6.5 from 2015. So over the last year, these companies have gone from scouting the region, as we've heard from that previous story, to actively owning chunks of it. The first step, of course, was Alibaba's $1 billion investment in Lazada. They've since firmed up its shareholding, paying another $1 billion in June to take ownership to 83%. Alibaba didn't stand still there, though. It moved on to a series of fintech investments in Southeast Asia. Ant Financial, who are the financial arm, they invested $1.2 billion in for the U.S.-based MoneyGram and Korea's KakaoPay. But in Southeast Asia, they've done deals with Thailand-based Ascend Money, Mint in the Philippines, MTech in Indonesia, and Singapore's MDAC. Then earlier this month, Alibaba itself opened the coffers again to invest in a $50 million round for online insurance site Compare Asia Group. Tencent, meanwhile, they got a long-standing investment in Thailand-based media Sanook, while they invested $19 million in a joint media venture with Ookbee, another Thai company. On the product side, they've been pushing Jukes in Southeast Asia. I'm sure we've all seen this, the kind of rival to Spotify, allegedly. Yeah. Whilst they also invested in a U.S. karaoke app, Smule, which does have strong traction in this region, unfortunately. Anyway, through discussion with founders, TechCrunch, from where this article is from, understands that Tencent and Alibaba have held discussions with at least a dozen startups that operate in Southeast Asia's e-commerce or fintech space. In almost every instance, it seems that both company giants have been in touch with a near identical set of companies to make these offers. So basically, they are carving up Southeast Asia's nascent kind of startup system. Now, they're expected to be, Alibaba is expected to be a part. This is an interesting piece, right? So this article was published day before yesterday, I think. Listen to this. Alibaba is expected to be a part of a group of investors behind a new funding round for Uber rival Grab, which could reach $2
billion. That's what I just said.
Yeah, and is expected to close soon. But Alibaba are also rumored to have held talks with Gojek. Didn't you also say that as well?
Yeah.
A rival to Grab and Uber, which is widely blocked. However, in a twist, Gojek ended up agreeing to take investment from Tencent as part of an as-yet-unannounced 1.2 billion round that would value the company at 3 billion.
So this is something that came out in May, but it hasn't officially been announced, right? That 1.2 billion.
But we all know
funding.
What's going on.
So what you see from like Tencent and Alibaba is like they're noticing a trend. Mm. And they're attacking the same kind of companies and trying to pump as much money as possible just to kind of get a heads up in the Southeast Asia.
And the interesting thing is a lot of these companies are taking funding from both companies as opposed to just one of them.
Hmm. But don't you have to pick a side?
Well, normally you would have to, but these guys seem to be getting this weird kind of Game of Thrones agreement going on.
No, but that's the thing. You know, in the Game of Thrones, you somebody either has win to or die. You die.
Yeah, exactly, right?
That's exactly what it will come to. I mean, if you look at this, one, the consumers benefit because there's a lot of competition, and then startups benefit because they're getting a lot of money.
They're getting a lot of money
from both these giants. And I think even the giants themselves don't, I don't think they care that much about who survives in the long run. They're just doing this. You pump enough money into the scene and the strong ones survive, the weak ones die.
Right.
And then you can continue investing with the stronger ones.
Right.
Exactly like Game of Thrones.
It's so
aggressive. It's so aggressive and it's also painful. But imagine if you're one of those companies, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it's like Grab and Uber, you know, well-established companies with like, I don't know, that are worth like billions, fine and well, but you know, if you're like a small, like you said, they've been talking to small startups. And
O-Bike, for example,
over
in Singapore.
Then?
I mean, it's just like any VC. You speak to any VC and they'll tell you that if they pump money into like 10 of them, they don't expect all 10 to come up.
Right.
They give them like a year or two and then they expect like most of them to die out. And the strong ones, then they keep pumping money into it.
Yeah.
Same logic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, speaking of funding for, you know, small companies.
Yes.
Promising companies. You've got a story on that right after the break, right?
Right. See that little segue there?
Ooh, nice segue.
Well done. Okay, speaking about carving things up, it is Jet next with Rip It Up here on BFM 89.9.
Banish fraudulent maneuvers. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bites. I'm Rich Bradbury with
Arvind Yuvaraj
and
Audrey Raj.
If you missed any part of this show so far, head over to the BFM website where you can download the podcast. If you cannot be bothered to do that, there's an app you can get on your phone.
Yes.
It's available on the App Store and on Google Play, and we are CarPlay enabled. Right?
Yes, we are.
If you want to get in touch with the show, 018-789-8899 via WhatsApp, or you can get us on Twitter at BFM Radio. Moving on to our third story today, an article picked up from The Star, I believe. Bursa's new platform for small firms to seek listing. I'm trying to make it sound really exciting. The stage has been set for the setting up of the Leading Entrepreneur Accelerator Program, LEAP, following an announcement by Bursa Malaysia on new listing requirements and amendments to some of its regulations. Good news for the approximately 19,000 small and medium enterprises who will now have a new avenue to raise funds via the capital market in an efficient manner.
Mm.
In a nutshell, the LEAP market will be the feeder market for an SME seeking for a listing. So the LEAP platform will provide them with fundraising access and visibility through capital markets. So currently 96% of SME funding comes from the banking sector, which is an indication of its dependence on financial institutions for its needs. Less than 4% comes from the capital market.
Yep.
So this marks a significant milestone for Bursa Malaysia. This is according to Datuk Sri Tajuddin Atan, and she says it marks a significant milestone for Bursa Malaysia. The LEAP market complements both the main market and ACE market, which is the access, certainty and efficiency, by addressing the funding gap faced by the SMEs. So as the national exchange, they believe the exchange can play a greater developmental role to facilitate fundraising for the growth of SMEs. So there you go. Finally, so what kind of company qualifies for LEAP? It's open to all Malaysian SMEs, which are public companies. No profit track record and operating history is required. For a submission, an information memorandum will suffice. No prospectus is needed. Nonetheless, the public spread of the shares must be equal to or more than 10% at listing, and there's no requirement to maintain any minimal public spread post-listing.
Yeah, so we've been hearing about this from some of the SMEs that we've been interviewing on the show. So they've always said, no, keeping it hush-hush, market is coming up and, you know, we're hoping to be on the market as well. We're just waiting for that announcement from Bursa Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
The announcement is finally here. And
there
this
we
is,
go.
This is great news because I think one of the stats that the Morning Run gang pulled up is that 97% of businesses in Malaysia are SMEs. So this applies to 97%. of the businesses in our country.
Of the market out there, yeah.
Yeah, so this is great news for them. And, you know, like how like the funding ecosystem is basically made up of like your Bursa Malaysia, your ACE Market, then you've got the ECF on one side, you've got angel investors, you've got venture capitalists. So this provides an alternative for them. And like you said, you know, the requirements are really simple. You know, it's open to all Malaysian SMEs, which are public companies. No profit track record or operating history is required. So, you know, I think it's a great opportunity. This is really good news for SMEs out there.
It will, like you say, it will help everybody. You know, every kind of SME who wants to get involved in this, it's going to really help them out. And the minimum requirements, I think, is going to appeal to an awful lot of people because it's the red tape that tends to put people off from trying to do something like this.
Yeah, right? And then, like, you know, I think most of them struggle because, like it said, and there was another stat in here that said that something about 96% of these SMEs actually have to get funding from banks.
Yeah.
So this also alleviates the whole loan process with your financial institutions as well. So,
all right. Do you want to... tell us that we've got another break now, Audrey, because you did so well last time.
Yes, we are going into another break. I hope Rich has some music for you. But when we come back, we have stories on Disney watching you while you're watching them. Creepy stuff.
It sounds so creepy. Oh, Arvin, where do you find these creepy stories? And it's always about people watching people, you know?
But I think we also have to give credit to some of the people that help us source for these stories.
True.
We have some pretty cool interns, they find some like pretty amazing stories for us. So we source for them, and they put in some good stories as well for us. Today, I think the Disney one was by an intern. It was either Vanessa or Denise. So, you know, kudos to them.
And then we've got stories that we also just, you know, check in the bin, like that pink little lizard with like T-Rex arms.
What was wrong with the pink lizard story?
How does that apply to SMEs and like the entrepreneurial ecosystem that we are trying to entertain and inform today, Richard?
Maybe he's got his own business.
Maybe they can chop your tails off.
Maybe. Ooh.
Oh, stop it already. Don't
All right, enough. Stop arguing. Right, it's time to take a break. We've got some Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers coming up. I should have known it. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bold factual media. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bites with me, Rich Bradbury.
And Arvind Yuvraj.
And Audrey Raj.
So we've had stories about Grab and Alibaba and Tencent and the Bursa. What are we doing next then?
So now we're going to talk about Disney.
Right. Yeah. All these stories are linked.
Somehow.
Somehow. Right.
Some deeper meaning. So you know how we always talk about how companies use like algorithms and machine learning, and they use data to sort of fine-tune their products so that they can
Spy on us more.
Like Dolby last week.
Dolby, like how they want to track what people are feeling when they were watching movies so they could tune the movies to make them scarier or more, have warmer emotional feeling. So Disney Research has developed a neural network for themselves, and what they're going to do with it is they're going to use it to watch you while you are watching one of their films.
Say that sentence again and make it sound not creepy.
Disney is going to use a neural network to watch you while you watch their films.
Yeah, still creepy. Still creepy.
Doesn't Silverchair have a song like that? I'm watching you watch over me, and I've got the greatest
police,
view.
The police as well. The police have got one as well, right?
That's a stalker song.
Yeah, like people play that at their weddings, you know.
Yeah, like Sting himself has said that's a creepy stalker song.
Right, yeah. Anyway, back to the creepy stalker story.
Anyway, so what they're doing is, this is not for the public yet. So what they're going to do is, I mean, studios have done this since, you know, they have been studios, so they get like a group into a small screening room, then they show them a movie, and then if they're happy with it, then they release the movie, and then they're not happy with it.
Focus groups.
So then they cut the movie up, and then they re-edit and stuff. What they're going to do now is they're going to show like a full movie to a focus group, and then they're going to see what the focus group is feeling. So they're going to track their faces using like infrared cameras and stuff, and they're going to use that data to sort of fine-tune their movies in the future. What will happen is if they find a way to actually edit the movie while it's going on. Yeah, so that is like a future step. What it means is, if just say they're screening it to an audience and the audience isn't responding, there is a chance that they could edit the movie on the fly. So you have different versions of the movie. Let's say it works in the US, same movie doesn't apply in the UK or doesn't apply in Australia, doesn't apply, let's say, in Asia. So they get a sense that the audience isn't feeling it.
Right.
So then they switch it At halfway or the halfway mark, or you know, at some point, and then the movie changes. So you get a different movie for every different kind of audience.
You could totally troll the movie makers by this. You can get all of your friends in the same room and say, right, at this point, we're all going to smile, you know, or we're all going to look sad. Or
But no, but it's also tracking your eyes.
Right.
So you could smile or do whatever you want, but I mean, you couldn't actually cheat the thing that easily.
Oh,
you know, it could pick up. Yeah, because
it's shattering my dreams here.
No, I just find this like really fascinating because if you've been part of the film industry or you've studied film, you'd know that sometimes post-production or editing can take just as long as actually filming a movie, right? So if they're going to do this on the fly, or maybe they will have like preset, like
pre-recorded segments.
Pre-recorded,
possibly.
No, so so I mean, but this is far off. They're not planning on this now. This is something that they think could happen. So they could have different variations of the same movie. It's like what Netflix is doing. Like we spoke about this, I think, last month.
Yeah,
like choose your own.
Choose your own path and stuff, and then you have like different scenes that pop up. So movies could do that, so that it applies to different countries. But for now, what they're doing is it says that this neural network that they've built, it can track reactions like smiling and laughter on hundreds of faces in a dark theater, allowing Disney to quantify whether or not a film is working as intended on a granular scale. So this is basically in food terms, this is something called the bliss point. So basically, when it comes to food, is that it's quantifiably at its most delicious, but also it's unsatisfying enough so that you always crave more. So I mean, they've already done these testing. So last year, I think they did it for The Jungle Book, and then they also tested it with Star Wars The Force Awakens. They had it in 150 showings of these films. I'm not sure whether people knew they had it in there or not, but then they tested it and then they got the feedback from those movies. They probably are using this data now to make their future films. You know, it's also that what's different from doing this and using machines now compared to like maybe 30 years ago when they would do it focus groups is that the amount of analysis that Disney can get when they use this. Like it's basically using like 3,179 people that they tested with, and they made like 16 million points of data.
That's an awful lot of data to get through.
And it's also genuine feedback, because sometimes you're in a focus group and you know everybody loved the movie and you feel like, okay, well, for me it wasn't so great, but I'm just not going to tell everyone exactly how I found it, just because everyone seems to be in agreement. I know there's like peer pressure or but this way with facial recognition they can actually tell how much you're enjoying it, the degree that you're enjoying it.
But in terms of like other real world applications, what else could it be used for then?
There's also the in real world applications, it says that they can actually track the movements of objects, the movements of let's say trees in the wind. Then they can use it in the animation, so animation looks more real.
I know Microsoft were using like this computer vision system to recognize facial and body language. For example, researchers actually programmed an elevator to know whether it should open or close its doors just by you walking past, because it read your body language.
Yeah,
you know, it just didn't assume. It kind of read where you were looking and how you were walking, and this person needs to use the elevator. Ding.
And then you got that story that we did last week on Walmart using facial recognition to, you know, send customer service over and to check if you're having a bad day. Anything they can do to improve your shopping experience.
That's what they said, right?
Yeah.
Snapchat does it.
Yeah.
So Snapchat, it says that it measures the shot-by-shot performance of its Snapchat shows. Then it means that the company, it can see if a 10-second blip is actually working for the audience, and it's actually using these insights to change the way that it produces its own content.
Very interesting stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, if Disney keeps doing this, it just means, I don't know. I mean, it sounds creepy, but in the long run, it means that Disney will be able to cater to more people who actually enjoy their movies more and more.
Mm.
They already do it. So imagine if they have all their data and then they know what works and it doesn't work. It just means that we get better movies, I guess.
Well, that too. But, I mean, if you look at this on a larger scale, let's say if we kind of look at this and we look at the problem we had with Beauty and the Beast, right, for example. Imagine if you'd got those people who complain about Beauty and the Beast in a room, watching Beauty and the Beast at one point, and in the future, like you say, you can edit movies on the fly. There wouldn't have been any of this hassle about us having to, you know, censor it, because they would have already been self-censoring it. Does that make kind of make sense?
True.
Hmm. Yeah.
Maybe in a way when I don't know. Maybe if they screened it, they would have actually swapped out certain scenes
right.
with other scenes. At that one, I don't know how I feel about
yeah.
because I feel there should be like one version of a movie and right. you shouldn't yeah. be watching like different versions of a movie.
Exactly.
That yeah.
What I want to see might be very different to what you want to see mm-hmm. or what Audrey wants to see. So mm-hmm. somebody in that room making a decision for me when I would prefer the director has made that decision for me.
Yeah. Like for example, like the movie Entrapment that was right. shot here.
Yeah.
I think if they screened it here, then you'd see a lot of confused looks on like Malaysians' faces because like Melaka was behind the Twin Towers or something. Uh-huh. They did some weird thing like that.
Yeah.
So maybe if they track that, then they could just swap it out with actual scenes of Malaysia that isn't edited to look like there's like Ipoh is behind the KL Tower. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And on another note, right? Just imagine if Disney's already doing this for its movies. Next step will be their parks.
Oh yeah.
Imagine
yeah.
how they could cater their rides to be more thrilling or scarier even.
So we had the story about VR in parks as well. So this link mm-hmm. between Disney and VR. Oh, it's a brave new world.
It is.
Music coming up. The Sonics with Louie. We'll be right back in a couple of minutes with our final story all about the death of one of our favourite pieces of software. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Bruce Freddie Morrissey. BFM 89.9. Point nine.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury. This is
Audrey Raj
and
Arvind Yuvaraj.
Almost time to end the show, but we've got one final story for us, and sad to announce the death of something. It's the death of Microsoft Paint. Right.
I don't know why you're so sad about
this. I am
this.
So sad. It's
very somber, very fast.
I wanted it to go really somber very fast because a lot of people, this was their first introduction to using any kind of design software or any kind of painting software. Mm. Right? So for us oldies, Audrey, this is a big thing. Gee. I'm not calling you an oldie. I'm referring to myself as an oldie, not you, of course.
Ooh, I just saw something fly across the studio.
Oh, bing. Just ripped. Yeah, it's clippy.
No, but when was the last that you actually used Microsoft Paint?
I honestly cannot remember.
How many times do you think you've used it in your lifetime?
I want to say that I used it extensively during the early 1990s, but in reality, I probably used it about 10 times.
So that's the thing, right? I was thinking, like, how often have I used Paint? And I remember having a computer before the internet even
existed
mm-hmm. right? And I think I've used it maybe a handful of times.
Right.
And that's also because I got tired of playing solitaire and Minesweeper. And what else do you do? You just write your name with the mouse using Paint, right?
But I think it's like a nostalgic factor, though, right? That's why we kind of... And I think that's why this is a piece of news right now, because if we look at the actual piece of software in today's market, it's completely useless unless...
Unless, I know some people who still design on it.
Really?
I think they design on it. I think some kinds of animation even use it.
Right.
There's this cartoon that was released, I think, 2016 from Australia, where it's done completely in Paint.
Wow.
And it's good. I can't say the name on air,
right.
but it's a good cartoon. It's not meant for kids.
That's why we can't talk about it.
Yeah, it's really funny. It's funny and it's, you know, it's...
It's a bit naughty, is it?
Yeah, it is. All right,
Well, coming back to the story, Microsoft's next Windows 10 update, which is called the Autumn Creators Update, will have a variety of new features, but it's been confirmed that one Windows experience that's been put on the chopping block is Microsoft Paint. Now, the whole reason why Microsoft can actually kill Paint off is that it recently unveiled a reportedly cooler alternative. They're calling it the MS Paint 3D. But the main object of Paint 3D is to make 3D objects. So it's not what we used to use Paint for. And it basically won't appeal to those who appreciate the obstacles of trying to do things with that only Paint can, you know, right. that
huge pixelated names.
That infuriating joy of using your mouse to write your name.
I don't think there's anyone who said I would choose Paint because of its crazy limitations that you know that you can't design on.
But some people have actually made some really beautiful, like you said, like that cartoon. Right? Mm-hmm. I remember looking at a painting of Morgan Freeman using just Paint.
I remember that.
It was one of his younger pictures, right?
Yeah.
But it was so spot on. Spots.
But Morgan spots. Freeman has been ancient forever.
Yeah,
so it must have been a while ago,
thing,
this one.
Yeah, so the most recent version of Paint for Windows 7 was quite improved, but it's still considered quite poor, it's a poor feature when you can you compare it to like some of the other free alternatives like the third party paint.net. I'm not sure if any of you have tried that, but apparently it's better. And this at a time when Microsoft is attempting to reinvent itself as a company for creative ideas. So paint serves as a reminder of how utterly bad its creativity tools were.
So, we're just bashing it a little bit. But, you know, like I say, it's something nostalgic. And I remember, like you say, it's one of the... When you got your first computer, right? And, like, you're playing Solitaire and you're playing Minesweeper.
Ski-free.
Yeah.
I love Ski-free.
The only thing that was on there that was any kind of creative outlet and gave you a bit of fun was paint. And you draw your circles on it. And you figure out how to do an ellipse.
And you take screenshots. You can also crop screenshots,
pictures
right?
from the internet and stuff.
Yeah, but here's the thing. We are saying it's nostalgic, right? But according to Microsoft, as of last year, Paint still had more than 100 million monthly users.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. They're saying that at the same time, they're also going to remove Outlook Express.
Yeah,
and they're also going to remove screensavers from your default themes.
Right.
So you can't use those anymore.
Right.
But I think all of these features will still be available on the Windows Store. So this whole thing about RIP, MS Paint is... Well, kind of exaggerated for now, I guess. It might still be around for another decade or so. You just have to know where to go find it.
It's just going into the archives is what they're saying, right?
They're just updating it and kind of removing it. But I'm not surprised. The how many 100 million you said? For
100 million monthly users.
I'm not surprised because it's like the basic designing tool. I used Paint a lot when I was in like early secondary school because you go to like they're not going to install Photoshop for you in your school computer lab. They call it a lab, but you know they're not going to have Photoshop and anything Adobe. So I used that, and then I also used to design websites. And you design websites like GeoCities, those basic websites back then. Paint is like your biggest tool. I wouldn't call it designing, but I used it to, you know, crop my pictures and stuff.
So it's not death for Paint. No, right now that's not exactly accurate. And I just wanted to cap the story off by saying that there's one tweet that I saw on Twitter on Paint, right? It says, of all things that might have survived the Trump era, I figured Microsoft Paint would have definitely been one. This from Canadian political scientist Paul Ferry. He said that, so.
Oh. Well, that's that then. It's time for us to wrap up for the show. Let's go through some of the stories that we started off with. Audrey, hit us with your Grab story.
Yes, so Grab has just got a new injection, $2 billion, thanks to Didi and SoftBank.
We then moved on to how Alibaba and Tencent are carving up Southeast Asia's startup ecosystem in a Game of Thrones style. We then moved on to the Bursa Leap, how the Bursa's new platform for small firms to seek listings.
And then we moved on to Disney and how they want to watch you watching their movies so that they can understand you better and know what you like about the stuff they produce.
Another one of Arvin's creepy stories.
And finally, rest in peace, Microsoft Paint. Thanks for all the hideous doodles. Not exactly death for Paint, but then again, you know, a little bit of our childhood there just
sniff,
going to
sniff.
Rest. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So coming up next, we have the Breakfast Grill replay. Dato Nicole David is arguably Malaysia's most successful sports person, reigning as the world number one in squash for 108 consecutive months and maintaining a top 10 ranking for nearly 13 years. So she was on the grill this morning. The irony is that she is a beloved household name of an unloved sport, they call it, as squash remains unrecognized in the Olympics and has yet to gain much popularity locally. So the grill, they asked Dato Nicole her view on the future of the sport and cultivating local talent. That's coming up after the news at 1.
All right then, ladies and gentlemen, of course we will be back same time, same place tomorrow. On behalf of Arvin Uvaraj, Audrey Raj and myself, Richard Bradbury, it's time to bid you adieu. Some music coming up. It is the Get Up Kids with Holiday. You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.